Welcome back to Vocal Point. This is Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to shift gears and talk with the president of Wycliffe Bible Translators. He's also the author of a new book called The Finish Line. His name is Bob Creason. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Jerry. I appreciate being on with you.
Now, I understand this book, this new book, The Finish Line, Stories of Hope Through Bible Translation, gives a lot of hope about the possibility even of reaching the goal of virtually every language getting the Bible, perhaps by 2025. Is that possible?
Yeah, you know, one of the things we committed ourselves to a few years ago, Jerry, was working differently, believing that through those changes in the way we work and the practices, that God would use those efforts to accelerate the pace of Bible translation. So we made a commitment to Vision 2025. Vision 2025 was not about finishing, but it was about starting and giving the opportunity for access and then, of course, engagement with every people group on earth that need access to the Scriptures. And because of the Lord's goodness and kindness, I don't think we changed God's mind at all. We're actually on a pace to achieve that. So we're pretty excited. It's a very exciting time to be involved in Bible translation around the world.
How many languages are there around the world, and how many have the Bible?
There are around 6,900 languages, and right now there are about 2,000 projects that are actually underway, and there's around 1,800 that need some work started. So the translation need is what we're focused on, so there's about 1,800 translation needs that we believe are going to be started over the next 10 years or less.
Okay, wait a minute. If we were to just round these numbers off, you're saying there's about 7,000 languages approximately around the world. There are about 2,000 that you're already in the process of getting there, which means that they don't have the Bible yet or the portions thereof. And then there's 1,800 new ones that you want to add to that. That would mean that about 3,000 languages or so, roughly, have the Bible or portions thereof.
Don't need any work. Need any work. Or maybe need some revision or something like that, but they do have the opportunity at this point to engage with Scriptures. That's right.
And then 4,000 are in need. Now, obviously, wait a minute. Now, the vast majority of the population, I would hope, even at this kind of time, would have access to the Bible. So how many people approximately, or what percentage of the world population does that 4,000 or so languages, people groups of those languages not have the Bible about?
Yeah. So one of the things that Wycliffe has always been committed to is to reaching the least, what we call the least, the last, and the lost. It's our way of describing for people that we work with very small communities around the world. You know, you have these languages of wider communication like French, English, Spanish, Mandarin, but when you get down to where people actually live, they speak their mother tongue. It's a local language of communication. And sometimes these languages are quite small. They can be anywhere from 500 to 30 or 40,000 speakers.
Okay.
So these numbers that we're dealing with are not large numbers. It probably, the number of people in that 1,800 that don't have scripture translation started is less than 200 million people, maybe 180 million to 200 million people.
Okay. And then what about the other one, the 2,000 figure?
Well, I don't have those figures actually at my disposal, so you know, I realize we're on the air here.
Yeah.
But basically, what we're talking about is probably in that group of people, you may be talking about 800 million people, something like that. We're talking about what we would call minority language communities. These are smaller language communities around the world that are very isolated, sometimes isolated within larger cultures. Mm-hmm. So these languages are all pretty much located. 80 to 90% of these languages are located in Central Africa. There's a band of languages in the islands just off the coast of mainland Asia, so Papua New Guinea and Indonesia. That's another band of languages, and then there's some on the mainland of Southeast Asia that there's quite a bit of need to. So there's three major world centers, if you will. So Central Africa, mainland Asia, and the islands off the coast of Asia.
Now, I understand this book, The Finish Line, is part memoir, part devotional, and part call to action. Why don't you give people an overview of the book?
Yeah, you know, people say, well, why were you motivated to write a book? And part of it was I wanted to let people see this unique opportunity that we have. For whatever reason, God has appointed us the stewards of a very unique period of church history. So as we take a look at how we reach the remaining unreached people groups, the scriptures are absolutely an essential part of being able to do that. And what we see happening in this day and age is an acceleration of the ability that we have to reach these people groups. And so what I wanted to do was let people know about the unique opportunity, what's happening in terms of Bible translation. I used the journey of my family, me and my wife Dallas, along with our four kids. Now we've got a grandson, but let them know that this was a unique path for us, but it's not so unique in terms of what God does in people's lives. Everybody's got a journey. You too could be a part of this. I wanted to be able to illustrate that, but then also illustrate what's going on in terms of the acceleration of Bible translation, because in the 30 years that we've been involved, Jerry, the average length of time to get a New Testament done has dropped from about 25 years to under 10 years. Hmm. And there are specific reasons for that. So I wanted to illustrate that. And the book is a collection of stories. My wife told me the other day, and I'm not sure it's a compliment, but I'm going to take it that way. She says it's a very easy read. So basically it's a series of stories that are strung together that people can relate to, hopefully, that tell us a very unique and interesting story that captivates their attention. But at the end, it gives them an opportunity then to be engaged and involved.
Well, tell us about your own involvement in Bible translation.
Yeah, briefly, I grew up in Southern California, married my high school sweetheart. Her name is Dallas. We've been married for 40 years. I was in business in Southern California after I got out of college. I did that for about 10 years when God began to speak to us about something different, doing something different with our lives. The way Dallas describes it is it felt like our shoes were just on the wrong feet. But we were very dug into the community out there. God began to speak to us about something different. Wycliffe then rose to a level of our attention that really captivated our interest, partly because the Word of God had impacted our own lives, and we wanted other people to have that opportunity as well. So we became part of full-time staff with Wycliffe back in 1983. Mm. We went to West Africa for 10 years. I came back to the United States when our oldest daughter graduated from high school, and I was part of our international administration. The last job I had before we moved out here to Orlando to be president and CEO, I was the international field director for all of our worldwide field work. So that was for 10 years, and now I've been here in Orlando actually for 11 years. So almost a little over 31 years now with Wycliffe.
Hmm. Wow, congratulations. Now, when you, let's go back to the Africa part. When you would actually work with a people group, a tribe that didn't have anything written as far as the scriptures, did they even have a written language in the first place?
You're right. They did not. In fact, all the languages, these 1,800 that we're going to be dealing with that need Bible translation, every one of them needs a written language. So they're all unwritten at this point.
May I interrupt you for one second?
Oh, yeah.
I just want to say one of the incredible benefits that Christianity has brought in 2,000 years of Christian history is the codifying of hundreds of languages around the world. I mean, even the Russian alphabet that in the heyday of the Soviet Union, the atheistic Soviet Union, they used the Cyrillic alphabet created by two Christian brothers, Methodius and Cyril, going back to about 800 AD. But, I mean, I'm serious. Christianity has contributed
Jerry,
so much to civilization through that way.
Yeah, I hope your listeners catch on to this, because I'll often tell people that God's given Wycliffe two great privileges. One is obviously creating access to the Bible, God's eternal word. The second is opportunity for education, because until a language is written, you don't have an opportunity then to develop written materials for that people group. And so often what happens, Jerry, just to add a little color commentary to what you just said, once you have literacy going in a local community, people take that same skill set, learning their own language, they apply it to a language of wider communication, like French, Spanish, or English. They use that same skill set to learn that language, and it opens up a whole new world for them. So I often tell people God's given us another privilege, and that is opening these doors to education for people around the world. So women become literate, for example, and help needs improve within communities. So that is absolutely a gift God has allowed us as believers and as Christians to share with the peoples of the earth.
So here you are in Africa. West mm-hmm. Africa, you say. You can name the country if you wish. I don't know, unless it's
Cameroon. Yeah,
Cameroon.
Okay. That is where we worked, yeah.
All right, so you're working with the tribe. They don't even have a written language. They don't necessarily even know what writing is. I perhaps. I'm not even sure. How did you, you know, walk us through the steps briefly?
It's probably, first of all, for your listeners, and, you know, just to be completely clear, my wife and I went to the field as administrators. We didn't go out as linguist translators. So I don't have any firsthand experience in that area, but believe me, over 30 years, I've seen this happen enough. I can describe it for you. In Cameroon, for example, there were 230 unique language communities.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a challenge.
So... Yeah, and so within those language communities, it's a little bit of a, you know, it's we wouldn't be doing these communities the service or giving them the due that we should, because there are many well-educated people within these communities. So while their mother tongue may not have been developed, they may have gone to school or even university in a language of wider communication. So in Cameroon, for example, that would have been French or English. And so they may even have, you know, doctoral degrees. Oh. But what happens then, and your listeners will understand this, if you don't have the scriptures in a language that you understand well, you
yes.
miss large portions of the truth of God's word, yeah. or you misunderstand them, or they're miscommunicated. So particularly for older people, particularly in societies that are what I would call pre-literate,
mm-hmm.
If you can provide materials for them in a language that they understand well, and it's natural and it's an accurate translation, you open doors for people to the good news of the gospel. So one of the first things that we're doing today, the paradigm for Bible translation has actually changed quite a bit. So where before we used to assign a linguist translator to a group of people and ask them to work with that group, they would, you know, reduce the language to writing, they would teach people to read and write, and they would produce the New Testament. That would be the classic paradigm for Bible translation. The new paradigm for Bible translation is local communities actually inviting us to be a part of the process. So they have their own translation goals. And this will also, I think, make sense because it's logical. If you don't have a written language, these communities, many of them, are oral learners. They don't have anything to read and write at this point, so they don't have a value for literacy. So what they will often do is they will start on the basis of translating stories from the Bible. So it's called chronological Bible story, and it's something that the International Mission Board perfected years ago, and the model is followed today by many other organizations. You do a worldview study, and based on that worldview study, you may choose 30 or 40 stories out of a menu of about 160 Bible stories that best communicate the truths of the gospel. You translate those stories, and then you train storytellers, and they tell those stories over and over and over again. That almost always leads to written translation. I don't know that I've ever seen a community that where you didn't make that transition. So then often it's the Gospel of Luke that goes next, then it's the Jesus film. We have a huge partnership with Campus Crusade for Christ and the Jesus film. Then often it's the whole New Testament, and then we have another major, we have lots of major partners that do recording. One of our major partners is Faith Guns by Hearing, so there's a whole recording done of the New Testament, and people will actually sit and listen to these recordings. So word for word recording, they'll sit with their Bibles in front of them and they'll learn to read.
Wow.
Based on listening to those recordings. And then it often leads to a translation of the Old Testament as well. So you get the full counsel of God at some point.
Good. We're talking right now with Bob Creason. He's the president and CEO of Wycliffe, which is based in Orlando. It's the largest scriptural translation organization in the world, working in 97 countries and overseeing more than 7,000 translators, linguists, aviators, humanitarian workers, educators, and administrators. And this is an organization that was founded in 1942, and Bob Creason is the author of a new book, which is called The Finish Line. And where can people get this book, Bob?
Right now, the easiest way to do it, there's two ways they could do it. If they'd like to have it in a digital format, we did it specifically so that younger people could download digitally, although I know some of my own peers do this as well. You can go to Amazon.com and you can download it digitally for only 99 cents. It's not a big purchase. Or if you would like to go out to our website, wycliffe.org, you can actually order copies at wycliffe.org. And by the way, there's lots of opportunities on wycliffe.org. If people are motivated to pray, they can pray for a group that don't have the scriptures yet. If they're led to give, they can find a project where they can contribute to getting the scriptures to a group of people. Or there's literacy opportunities there as well. They can give to those. And if people want to go and be a part of this, they can go overseas as well. But wycliffe.org is the place to start.
And Wycliffe is spelled W-Y-C-L-I-F-F-E. Named after John Wycliffe, who was the first, or credited to be really the first, to translate the Bible into English. from now that's from the Latin version, whereas the guy, his name escapes me, but the one who was executed in 1536.
Tyndale actually did he did it from the
original Greek and Hebrew.
That's correct.
Yeah.
What John Wycliffe did is he used the Latin Vulgate to do his translation. So, but you know that the story of Wycliffe is really kind of an interesting story, just briefly. And I love the fact that we're named after John Wycliffe because what he did is he translated
10 seconds
for the minority population of his day. It was the English peasants. If you go back to the day of John Wycliffe, the English language was basically a throwaway language.
Okay,
Wycliffe. The church used Latin.
Wycliffe.org for more information. Thank you.